Welcome to the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development for what may be our final meeting of this session. We are going to start off today way out of order with House Bill 336, then go into a work session on 2299, 3359, and then 3197, 3555, and then finish 3336. So with that, let me open up a public hearing on House Bill 3336A. Linda?
Basically, this bill requires state institutions of higher learning to allow military recruitment on campus on an equal footing with other employment recruitment.
And we are going to take testimony from Representative Widener and recess, go do our other work, but I know you have some time constraints, so welcome.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. State Representative Jim Widener, House District 24, and I will be very short and brief on this because I know you're under time constraints. This is a bill that passed unanimously out of the Education Committee on the other side and 59-1 on the House floor. Essentially, this just says when you have job fair day at our higher institutions that military recruitment can be there as an option. I have a more detailed testimony, but I will have that sent down to you so you can have it for your file and everything, and we'll keep this short and sweet and answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions, Representative Widener, Senator Shields?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I appreciate bringing this forward. Did the ACLU weigh in on this bill at all?
I believe the ACLU, I don't think they testified on the other side. The only issue we ran into on the other side was the school that might have a reason for not be religious reasons for not wanting to do military recruitment, so we went and exempted them out of it. So if you have a Quaker school or something like that, they would not fall under the jurisdiction of this bill. And that was the only opposite. It wasn't even opposition. It was something that kind of came up in committee, and we went and amended that and fixed it. And like I say, there's no known opposition. General Caldwell will come up and speak a little later on it as well. So,
Follow up. And this is only relates to institutions of higher education, not high schools?
Correct.
Thank you.
So, and it's just when you have job fair day that all the other employers that set up that military recruiters can set up as an option for people to look at. So,
Mr. Chair? Thank you. Thank you, Representative, for your testimony. You said that a school that would have a religious concern was exempted out. Is that clear? I have trouble finding that in the bill. Is it in the definition?
It was in one of the definitions, and I should have brought the file down. And I don't think it actually, my staff is right here behind me. So this is an amendment that actually came from Representative Gelser, and it was basically on B, subsection, non-state intuition of higher learning may receive state funding for educational activities or assistance of institution provides a statement to the State Board of Education and other Oregon Student Assessment Commission certifying that the institution is affiliated with a religious organization that has a long-standing and traditional objection to military service. So if this is a...
I just don't see that in the bill, but maybe I'm looking at... Is the A engrossed?
Or am I missing not exactly, anything? But right there it says it does take out those who accept it. It's deleted.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative, are there any state institutions that don't allow members and agents of the armed forces to recruit?
At this point, no. So there were some issues over don't ask, don't tell, some things like that. But even Representative Dimbro, he had talked about that on the record and everything, and he was very supportive of it and where things were at right now. So,
okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm going to temporarily, well, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3336. And we are going to open up a work session on House Bill 3359 for purposes of adding the Dash 3 amendment and moving it to the floor, Senator Marshall.
We did adopt the Dash 3 amendments.
Did we adopt the Dash 3s?
Yes, we did. Last Thursday.
So it's ready to go.
So you want to go, Mr. Chair?
Please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3359 as amended to the floor of the DuPass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3359 as amended to the floor of the DuPass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator George.
So as you know, I was in Mitchell this weekend and saw the high school there and gave him a big thumbs up from the committee.
I bought a
Diet Coke and a jerky steak just to support the town. Just want to put that on the record. I was there for it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment that I was convinced from the testimony that there's a benefit to the students who are both from Mitchell and the students who come from other countries to learn about each other's cultures. I'm going to support this bill, but I still remain concerned that I hope that the motivation is for that cultural exchange and not just to get enough students so they can get the funding that they need, because that's our responsibility as a state to be adequately funding our schools, which we aren't doing. And so I did see some benefit to that cultural exchange, but I hope that in the future we can fund our schools to the level that these students are there for the right reasons. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3359, as amended, goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a DuPass recommendation, and we will let Senator Ferrioli carry this bill. Close the work session on House Bill 3359. I'll open up a work session on House Bill 2299. Linda, if you refresh us, I know it's a technical department issue, and we have the department here in case we need to.
Correct. And we did adopt the Dash 7 amendments to this, but House Bill 2299 requires the school district in which a public charter school is located to be responsible for identifying, locating, and evaluating students to determine which students may be in need of special education and related services. The amendment basically clarified notices being sent from the districts to the charter schools and notifying the parents and specific time frames for the notices and the start of funding.
And that was the Dash 7s?
Yes, sir. And we adopted those last Thursday.
Yes. Okay. Is everybody okay? We have the Department of Education. Yeah. The record shows the department gives us a thumbs up. Oh, sorry. Record shows that was Morgan Allen. Giving us, he raised one of his fingers. Okay, so we're okay with this amendment. Sir Morris?
Are we in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2299 as amended to the floor with a DuPass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 2299 as amended to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2299 as amended goes to the floor with a DuPass recommendation. Senator Morris, we are to you.
Certainly.
Would you like to carry this?
Certainly.
Okay. Close the work session on House Bill 2299, and moving right along, 3355. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 3555. Linda, Representative Parrish, you want to come forward and we'll get a summary.
Okay. House Bill 3555 allows persons without administrative license to be a superintendent or assistant superintendent of a public school, public charter school, virtual public charter school, and ESD. Requires superintendent of public school or ESD or assistant superintendent of public school who does not have administrative license to complete within 1 year of being hired a program conducted by a professional organization of school administrators.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Julie Parrish from House District 37, serving Westland and Tualatin. Coming before you today, and I'm going to try to be as genial as possible about this, I was just told about a half hour ago that one of the supporters of the bill and a group that I had worked very hard to amend this with has flipped and changed their mind and now no longer supports the bill. So let me talk about the bill a little bit first and why I brought it forward. I used to be a school food service director, and as such, one of the things you have to do is manage your program. And so being a profit center operating in a cost center is a very interesting world to live in when you've got it charged with trying to manage your costs in an organization that really doesn't seem to always pay as astringent attention to the operating costs of the organization. One of the things that I saw was a significant amount of waste, mismanagement of school dollars, inappropriate expenditures, things that I just wasn't happy about. So when I took over the program, and understand I'm not a nutritionist, and I ran that program. I have a food service background, management background, running a school nutrition program, and was able to hop in there and learn it and get it done. The interesting thing is that the program was losing money when I got there. In the 2 years that I managed it, got to pretty much within a break even. The final year that I was there, they transferred $35,000 out of general fund to pay for a debt that was incurred before I got there. And I left the job with $100,000 worth of inventory on the books for the following school year. Since I've left, it's lost $500,000 in general fund transfers to the lunch program. So in my one little microcosm of a school district, I've had the experience of actually seeing up front the difference of having management, true management experience, running a fiscal profit center, and arguably school district that has a $65 million budget is one of the largest, you know, companies we have, that it's not just about the education piece. I trust my building principals to do that piece. Parts and functions of a school district, not just managing the education element, there's contracts, there's capital bonds, there is the labor piece, certainly, there's the public relations piece, there is the budget piece. I would say that's kind of arguably important. So when you look at a school district like mine that kind of consistently seems like they're struggling with money. I actually sat in front of a school superintendent, was told, don't worry about your budget because taxpayers will always give you more. I'm pretty much here to say I think taxpayers are kind of tired of that line. And we're seeing it. We're seeing it in the school bonds that just failed. We're seeing it in the levies that just failed, where folks are asking us to be smarter, better with our money. So this is a bill that's become a really interesting point of conversation because it doesn't cost us anything to pass this bill. And yet the savings could potentially be astronomical. When we have people who can manage and lead, and they don't necessarily have to be educators, who can come in and look at these school districts and give small school districts an opportunity to do something different, why wouldn't we get to yes on something like this? So it's just curious to me that suddenly now, you know, one of the proponents of the bill who I worked with has suddenly changed their mind. And I've gotten flanked behind me with the status quo folks who are here to advocate for the status quo. You're going to hear probably from TSPC, who's going to say, you know, we need to pay attention to these folks. And in fact, there was a floor letter on the House session that said that, you know, we've been doing this since 1952. Well, TSPC didn't come into existence to 1965. So what do we do for 13 years in this state with school superintendents who babysat them then? So I'm curious to, you know, I can't wait to hear what the testimony is around this and why bringing people with real-world experience into and management experience into our school districts to maybe try to find ways from within the district at the local level to fund and find ways to be smart with our money, why that's a bad idea. Right now, school districts are graduating kids at a rate of about 84%. Sounds okay on paper, but right now we also see that 80,000 18 to 23-year-olds are on food stamps. So somewhere we're not getting the money to where it needs to be, We're not doing the right thing by kids. Last session, I wasn't here, but I heard that the budget was enough, and it passed out of the House side, you know, cheered out of the House side. All the folks who voted no on it this time, saying it's not enough money, were people who voted yes on the same amount of money. And yet the irony of it is we have less kids in our K-12 system. If you actually go and look at the numbers, I'm kind of a numbers junkie. I like to look at numbers. So less kids, same money. Where are the costs going? Well, bills that we did not solve the costs this session, that's where those dollars are going. You want to call it PERS or health care or any of those kinds of things, this is a tool that will let school administrators at the local level work to solve their budget problems by maybe coming in and looking at things with a more critical fiscal eye. I think it's a responsible bill to pass. The other thing is that when we just hired a superintendent in our school district this session, we only had 15 applicants. I'm pretty sure Oregon's unemployment's around 10%. I bet there are people out there who are smart and savvy who could step in and do that role. We're not saying just anybody off the street. You know, I've got an MBA. I couldn't go run a school district and trust that my school principals and my teachers at the local level can do that job and give me the education feedback that I need. We also have assistant superintendents and TOSAs and all kinds of folks who are there to help with that piece. But the education is just one small facet of a very large corporation, $60 million, $65 million budget. That's big dollars. And we wouldn't put folks at the helm who were shop teachers who sat long enough in the chair to get a PhD. We wouldn't do that in our corporations, but we do it in our school districts. And so other states do this. This is not unheard of. And in fact, in Seattle Public Schools, right after I was in high school up there, they had a general who came in who was a military general. You got General Caldwell sitting right here in the room who runs the Oregon Youth Authority. The Youth Challenge down in Bend does a darn good job of it. I'm pretty sure he's not, you know, all hooked up with the TSPC, and he's not, you know, letting kids get out the wrong way, and his kids actually come out quite successful. And in fact, in the 3 years that the general up in Seattle was running that school district, they raised more funds, they had better test scores, and we never got to see what he finally wound up doing because he passed on while he was in the job. So other states do this. This is not uncommon. We're not. You know, breaking any ground here that's new ground. Other states are doing it. And in rural communities, when we have this extra barrier and threshold, wow, try getting people out to far corners, Oregon. That's an additional premium. It's not to say we don't want to pay folks, but it's an additional premium on top of the salary to get people to go live in far corners and be licensed and have everything that they need to do to jump through all those hoops. So we thought we had a good solution. We worked this bill hard, and here we are, and now I've got proponents of the bill who suddenly are, for whatever reason, they don't like it. I had a superintendent in my office on Friday, loved this bill. I had superintendents who came and testified, liked the bill. Superintendent from Baker County liked the bill. So I'm kind of curious where the suddenly dislike between the time it passed off the House floor and now that it's in your committee, it suddenly dislike it. And I will just say for the record, probably going to get smacked down for saying it, but there's been a lot of bills we've heard in the House side where folks didn't feel like they had to come testify because they're going to come to your side and say they don't like the bill. So I would hope you keep fresh eyes as you listen to the rest of the testimony today, and it is a good bill. It doesn't cost us anything, and we can't screw up schools any worse than they already are. So why not try something new? Good bill. I would urge your support. So, and if you've got questions, I'd be happy to take them. And I'll breathe.
Okay. Trying to keep fresh eyes here, Representative. And I apologize for moving into your bill here cold, but an administrative license is not an easy accomplishment. We talk to people who have done that, and there was lots of knowledge and testing on federal laws that are necessary for in our schools, and just a lot of information that a principal or a superintendent or an assistant superintendent know about.
Sure. Happy to respond to that. When I serve school lunch, there's a lot of rules and hoops and things that I had to know too, and it really didn't take me that long to get up to speed. The other piece of this is that a school district does typically come flanked with a lawyer who's well-versed in school law, so, you know, that's what you pay for your advisors for. The school finance piece, that's what most schools have a bookkeeper for in some ways. And this bill, as it was one to give folks in the COSA, felt like some things that they thought they wanted folks to know, they were going to work to go ahead and get them that knowledge, they came up and testified in favor and said, you know, we think we can get people up to speed in a year, and we think that we can also provide mentorship between other superintendents. And truthfully, that's what the school nutritionist, I'm not a nutritionist. I went in to go run the program. I was audited my first year. You get audited every 5 years. I just happened to take the job on an audit cycle, and I managed to pass. So, again, it is doable. And I think if you've got people who in their heart really want to get in there and do it, they're going to take it, and they're going to be passionate about it. This isn't just opening up the door to people who don't want to have education or care about education and are looking for a job. This is saying that the local authority gets the control over who they're going to hire, and that's regardless of what that, you know, whether they have that administrative licensure or not. And it also speaks to the fact that, it takes all kinds to get these jobs done. And, the path that we've been on, I'm not seeing the, like, stellar success rates coming out of our state. So I'm willing to try something different at this point.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Representative. Have you read The Death and Life of the Great American School System, the book by Diane Ravitch?
I haven't.
Educational writer. One of her chapters, she was actually the deputy secretary of education in the Bush administration. In one of her chapters, she goes through a lot of the different sort of school reforms and talks about why her view, looking back on them, seeing them implemented, has changed over the years. And in one of her chapters, she talks about, it's been a while since I read the book, but I believe it was in San Diego, where they brought in, I think it was a retired military, somebody with a business military background to run the school district, thinking that this was going to be a great idea. It turned out actually to not be a very good idea, and it didn't really work for them. So I guess my question is, isn't it more about the person rather than, you think this is a good idea, but don't we want somebody who really understands the whole nature of the education system and really understands what works and what doesn't? And somebody with an MBA just doesn't have that,
sure,
that background necessarily.
You know, we come to this building, and I didn't have a legislative background when I got here. I had a job when I started. I'll have a job when I leave. And we want people to come in sometimes and bring that fresh eyes, not people who are grown up in the system since 11th grade and been, you know, on track to do politics all their life. That fresh eyes perspective, I think, has shown us a lot this session when you have a lot of new people who've never been in politics before. I would argue that same fresh eyes is applicable in the school district, and particularly in a culture where we tend to inbreed, for lack of a better way to explain it. We're going to promote from within, and no outside view gets to come in and see it. And I would argue that sometimes some of those folks who come in, I've seen both success and failure, but I've also seen success and failure of people who are licensed too. I think that when all said and done, what you wind up with is the success is where the culture is open to it, and in states where the culture is more closed, we've seen a lot of pushback when people come in and try to do reform, because there's a lot of entrenched systems and they're fighting an uphill battle. I truthfully left the school district because I couldn't sit there and listen to let's go waste money. That goes against my grain, so it was just easier for me to walk away. And when people say, why would you leave a $70,000 a year job? Because I'm not going to sell my principal for money. So it was easier for me to just say, this is nuts, I can't be here, than to stick around and try to change it there. So I think when all said and done, when you've got this, like, very deeply entrenched, and we have it here, Oregon is known for it, in systems where it has to be a certain way. It's like the teacher bill that we didn't pass, 3549, which said that somebody with, Governor Kitzhaber, who's got a medical degree, could go and teach kids high school, health class. I'd be just fine with that if you want to come to my high school, because we're making the assumption that sitting in a chair long enough gives you some of those extra little skills, but we're not seeing the outcomes in Oregon be any different when you've got somebody who's got a master's degree versus a bachelor's degree teaching. You got other states who've got some, better outcomes than we do. So, again,
can I just follow up, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
I just want to follow up a little bit, and I
understand what you're saying, but I've seen in the district I represent, I have mostly Beaverton and some of Portland, and Beaverton hasn't really gone through too many superintendents. Portland's gone through a lot. But it seems like the process that they go through to hire a superintendent is really pretty thorough, and that they try very hard, and they do, you know, national searches and really try hard to get the best person for the job. And with all due respect, the legislature, this is designed to be a citizen legislature, and I don't think this running a school district is necessarily designed to be I don't see it as analogous, but don't they have processes in place to make sure that they get the best superintendent through the existing process that they have?
They do, with the criteria we've set down, and I guess that becomes a local control issue. Is that for us to decide what the local authority needs in their district, or is that for them to decide? This bill gives them the choice. This is bill doesn't say they can't still hire someone who got licensed through the TSPC. It doesn't say that at all. So this is giving them an option to try something different in their district. And I appreciate local control. I think a lot of times, I don't know what all of you said when you knocked doors, but local control is a big thing that people care about. So all this bill does is give local authority the option to use different hiring criteria not prescribed by the legislature to be able to actually open that up and make the decision at their level with their locally elected boards.
Thank you.
Senator Fields. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As somebody who's managed other people, I certainly can appreciate the notion that the most important thing in running a organization of considerable size is hiring the right people and managing them to run the operations effectively. So I can appreciate the intent of the bill. One thing that people came and talked to me about was that there is a mechanism to allow somebody to be hired as a superintendent on some type of alternative track. And I'm not an expert. I haven't sat on the education committee in the past, except in 2005. It's been a long time, and we didn't address that issue. Can you help me understand how that alternative track does not meet, I guess, the end result that you would like with this bill?
Well, I understand the alternative track is that, go back and get another degree. And a lot of times, if that track is coming from the inside of the institution, then they're eating up a lot of professional development funds to get that done. So that's taking away dollars from folks who could be working on other, an IA who's working on a teacher degree to go do that professional development track. And as I understand it, I think there might only be one university in our system who you can go do that through in Oregon. And so again, this also limits the candidates that come from out of state who are qualified to be superintendent in their state, but they're not qualified to come to Oregon and do that. We have the experience that same thing with teachers who come here, meet the standards in their state, but don't meet the standard here. And the irony of it is that the opportunity cost to meet Oregon standards is significantly high when you compare to other states and what they're doing and outcomes.
And maybe somebody who's going to testify in opposition,
sure,
like you
coming.
Mentioned, but I am curious. You had mentioned that there's only one place to do, and I would be interested, again, not to disparage your bill, but just factually to find out how long it takes somebody to go through one of those alternative
couple
programs.
Years.
It's a couple, 2 years?
COSA would probably answer it, but I've heard it can take as 2 to 3 years. I could be wrong.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, if somebody wants to be a superintendent, it seems like, I don't know if 2 years is appropriate, but they should be willing, in my view, to do what it takes in order to become a superintendent, as opposed to just putting in their application. Am I wrong there?
Well, again, you're making the assumption that the education they're going to get is going to make them a better leader, manager, or any other skill set that they're going to bring to the table, and they're not just jumping through a hoop.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The TSPC provides a criminology background check. Do districts, if they were going down this alternative path as per this bill, would they have access to the same LEDS background?
Thank you for asking the question. I asked when we looked at the other bill that went with this, the companion bill, 3549, around teachers, and I had that same question that you had. And can we specify that in the bill so we can just make sure that people are getting fingerprinted and we're not putting sex offenders in buildings, et cetera, et cetera. And the answer I got back from LC was that was redundant. It's also in other parts of statute, so they didn't feel the need to put it in the bill. But that, yes, they would still be required then to, you know, get fingerprints and do background checks. And, of course, then the local authority could actually make whatever process in terms of how much more stringent they'd like to do at the local level as well. I got pretty heavily backgrounded checked to go in and be, like, lunch lady. So I'm pretty sure they would do the same thing for superintendent at the local level.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vicki Chamberlain. Chuck Bennett, you want to join her?
I brought testimony. Good afternoon, members of the committee. For the record, Vicki Chamberlain, Director of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I will start out by saying I didn't testify on the other side because the bill was heard on a statewide furlough day, but I did submit written testimony. I sent in my testimony early. I'm hoping you've had an opportunity to look at it. I don't want to go through it point by point. I think my major points are this. I want to respond to a couple of questions you asked and just summarize some of the key points. In terms of licensure, the state of Oregon licensed educators before TSPC was created, and that happened in the Department of Education, and that's how the 1952 date came about. So the commission was created in 65, and then they were made a separate agency in 1973. But the State Board of Ed issued those licenses after 1952. So, and that was actually on mandate from the legislature. The licensure laws were set up by the legislature, and that's when they were uniformly applied. Our concern is not only the training, but I want to just address your questions because I think you clearly get the issues. In the alternative route license, it's an exceptional administrator license. We gave this to Jim Scherzinger in Portland, Gretchen Schutte in Gresham, Matt Proffitt. It's called the exceptional administrator license, and it's in response to a statute that was created in the 70s that said the commission would come up with a license for people who had alternative preparation. Ms. Schutte had a PhD in marine biology. And as you know, Mr. Scherzinger was working here in legislative fiscal
revenue.
Anyway, he was definitely the numbers guy. So that license doesn't require any additional preparation. It doesn't require that they go back to school. It just requires school district sponsorship. So in the 9 years that I've been here, we've issued four, and that's because that they've only been requested four times from districts.
Is this 342.20, that it's the public policy of the state that the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission, in establishing professional requirements and experience, shall consider professional skills and experience not directly related to nor contingent upon teaching experience. That's what you're referring to?
Senator Haas, it is, exactly. But the license created is all the licenses are created in administrative rules, and the license is called the Exceptional Administrator License. And there is no requirement in that license that people have to go back and obtain another degree or obtain any other advanced preparation. I just want to be clear about that the license exists, it's available, and... And in the time that I've been here, it hasn't been denied upon any request.
Okay.
Senator Shields.
Okay. Help to understand how that's operationalized. If somebody wants to go into to compete for one of these positions, they would apply and then put presumably in their cover letter that they would seek the position under this process. Then the school would... make them an offer and then apply, or how would that work?
Well, the one that I've been involved in involved a call from the school district saying that the top candidate that they were interviewing did not have a school preparation background, but in their opinion was the top candidate for the position. And was there licensure? And I said, yes, there's licensure. It just requires a district request. It's not that chicken and egg. They sent in the resume. You know, we looked at it. The person clearly had a lot of administrative experience, and like Representative Parrish, had some background at other levels, at school levels or other jobs that were similar. And so we were able to review it and evaluate it and say, yes, if he applied and you hired him, then we would be able to issue the license. So, like I said, it's not that iffy in that regard, but I understand your question.
Okay.
I also want to address the background check issue. This I think, is a very important issue. A couple of sessions ago, we came to you because the legislation that set up charter schools, for example, didn't allow TSPC to do anything other than conduct an initial fingerprint background check. Fingerprints are a snapshot in time. They're the time at when the person applies for the license. Anything that happens after that, we either have to discover or the person discloses, but essentially the people who were charter school teachers and charter school administrators weren't subject to the discipline laws. So in the testimony I gave you the big long list of things that could result in gross neglect of duty on the job. Because we had a situation with a charter school administrator who had misused funds and there was action taken against another professional license that he had, we have supported the charter school people and all of you to come in and tighten that up. So now charter school teachers and charter school administrators are subject to the same kind of discipline laws. But I want to be really clear. We do not review at all their credential. The charter school wanted to hire an administrator with a high school background. There is nothing that the commission could say to stop that. I haven't seen that happen yet, but that we just don't have that jurisdiction. But what we do have is the ability to take the license away if there's misconduct. If they're not registered with us or they're not licensed by us, the commission would not be able to do that. And further, the Department of Education conducts background checks of people who aren't licensed or registered by TSPC. The threshold there is whether or not they've been convicted of the long laundry list of felonies. It doesn't have anything. The ODE background check, fingerprint check cannot question if somebody has several convictions of harassment for example, assault, federal drug charges, and lots of fairly serious offenses. So somebody with a series of federal drug charges and assaults would clear an ODE background check because those crimes aren't on the list that prohibit us from licensing or them from clearing the fingerprint background check. So if someone does not disclose, that could be a problem. I think that the final thing is I brought with me Senate Bill 290 because this has been a session where there's been a lot of focus on increasing our accountability in schools, and we don't see the leadership in the school districts as being administrators or business managers or taking care of anything other than children and their future and their practice and their performance. So if we're going to increase scrutiny and evaluation for teachers and principals, I think it's very important that we have some standard for high quality expectation for the leaders that our districts hire. And so far, as far as I can tell, our districts have done a pretty good job. The few cases where they didn't make the initial great decision, we were able to come in and take the license away. And then that's the final thing. If they are disciplined by the commission, then we're able to put that action into the national clearinghouse. So it's an interstate pass the trash insurance policy, And we did have at least two people that I know of who were disciplined by the commission quite seriously for misconduct in superintendent jobs. One went to Alaska, one went to Colorado, and because they were in the system, those states were able to call us and make their own decisions about licensure in their future. So I think that's all I have right now, unless you have questions.
Why don't you stand by for a second, and we'll go to Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, or I'm making a valiant effort to. I first want to certainly agree with Representative Parrish. She worked with us in the House on this issue, and I think we all worked in what we believe to be good faith in developing a bill that dealt with some issues that she had raised, other issues regarding training pathways for folks who come into school administration without educational experience. And like so many things here, it sat, and in the process of sitting and being reviewed by a number of a large number of school administrators in the field, we began to hear a substantial opposition from superintendents and other administrators that were concerned, and I kind of want to explain what that concern sounds like. There is a pathway available. The exceptional administrator license is available, and the feedback we got was that's exceptional. What we don't want to do is standardize that exception, that in fact education leaders are best found among educators and people trained in education. And in fact, one of the things we were looking at throughout this discussion was how an organization, as specifically described in the bill as COSA, would put together a curriculum and focus it on the kinds of issues that an education leader needs to have to come into a school without experience or without the kind of educational background that's generally expected of people either seeking or attaining the superintendency of one of our school districts. But the bottom line was, and the concern that we heard consistently from the field, was this is an exceptional avenue, and we have an available avenue for that. It's an exceptional choice. The avenue is available. The folks that are being described by us and Representative Parrish in our discussion of this, because we had been in support of this bill, is a description of those folks with exceptional qualifications or that they bring to this. And I think, well, I don't think, I know, because I had it explained to me in pretty straightforward language, that we do not want that to become a description of who's going to be leading our educational institutions. And rather than being an exception, this created a situation where folks without the kind of educational experience and educational training we expect of superintendents would be actively engaged in taking on those positions, and that's not viewed by the state's education leaders as the correct way to go. And so I was asked to come in today to express our opposition to this bill, our interest in the concept, our continuing our plan to continue to work with TSPC on how to improve training both for those who come in through the education track and those who come in from outside of education. But a very strong belief from the folks we represent that this was not the correct, it just didn't all come together quite correctly for them. And believe me, I'm embarrassed to be here. I do not like to have to come in and have to give a different piece of testimony than in the House. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Morse.
Thank you. And thank you both for your testimony. A question to you, Becky. If someone comes through the exceptional route, Is there any criteria for the kind of education, or could you amplify what latitude you have to license someone that comes through the exceptional route?
Chair Hawes and Senator Morse, there is one criteria, and that is that they have some master's degree. It is education, and it could be any master's degree. And other than that, the vouching of the school district, clearing the background check. But and there's a statute that says that for all new licenses, we have to pass a civil rights test, and that's been in effect since 1975. It's fairly nominal. Other than that, and then there's a proviso in the rule that says that if the commission feels there are some, I wouldn't say weaknesses, but areas where someone could need additional work, they could prescribe, for example, or suggest a next step for renewal. But I've yet to see that happen. I have, as you know, I'm not professing to say I've done dozens of these because I haven't. But frankly, the school district's judgment is usually pretty good. The people whose resumes come in are spectacular. And it'd be very difficult to say, oh, yes, I think you're short on something. And I will tell you that I know that Ms. Schutte did actually go and have her degree compared to administrator preparation program and took one or two classes and then was able to achieve what in her mind was a more desirable license, which was the top administrative license. But she wasn't required to do that. So sometimes it's a matter of public image of, I want to show you that I'm committed. And so.
Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is for both of you. I'm trying to remember who it was, but I think it was the superintendent of Gaston Schools. It's in my district. I think that, so don't quote me on this, but I think that the superintendent is part-time. The district couldn't afford to have the superintendent full-time, so I'm not positive about that. I think the superintendent is part-time. Great guy. Part of the reason is cost constraints. And semi-retired came in and is managing as a part-time to help the school district, but also then fit within what works for that person. I can see districts all over the state taking advantage, small districts taking advantage of those kinds of flexibilities. Then you put on this requirement of this very narrow group of people who actually qualify to be superintendents under current state law. And this bill seems like it makes a lot of common sense to me. So, with that, hang on.
Yeah, sorry.
So, that's the setup to my question. It seems like to me that the difference between what I've heard on this bill, the negatives, and what Representative Parrish has brought forward is minuscule, meaning it is, to me, sort of like it's over here. Actually, the story of people's expectation of killing it over here is a legitimate concern, because I don't think that this is not, we couldn't work this out. We're now in a time crunch situation, and I think this is workable. It seems like to me that what Representative Parrish is trying to do is give school districts an option to hire somebody outside the profession of education who have management skills. Teachers' standard practices basically wants to do a background check. So it seems like to me that what you do is you allow the local school districts to do the hiring, and then if we want to put in state law that standards practices does the background check just to basically confirm that we fixed the problem here. That could easily be put into this bill, and unfortunately we've got a day and a half left to do it. And I find this to be a little frustrating, because what really comes ringing to me is more of, we don't want the competition of people coming from, you know, maybe partially retired people coming in and into our field, so we're going to bring up this concern about, oh my goodness, we could have child molesters in our schools, which is not going to happen under this bill. So to me, this sounds like a restraint of trade, blocking qualified people from coming in, and how come this could not have been worked out when the changes is minuscule between what everybody's been saying and what this bill is. So kind of give me some context on how hard it would be to change this bill to make it work for all of us.
I have a tiny thing.
Go ahead.
Chair Hobbs and Senator George, well, in my testimony in the House, and I can't remember if I said it here, if nothing else, please require that these folks be registered with the commission at the same level that charter school administrators currently are, in that they would be subject to our jurisdiction for misconduct. I mean, that would be, in my opinion, the lowest threshold of of accountability and state oversight, not just the background check, but then that they come in and they renew, there's a chance to look, and that the public has recourse through a state agency if they view misconduct, and sometimes that happens. But I do want to tell you that there are administrators out there, exact situation you had, who didn't have master's degree, and we have another license we call the emergency administrator, and there's one superintendent in this state who has had his board come up time after time saying, well, he's going to retire next year, and then he's going to retire next year. He's held that license for about 4 or 5 years now, and point being that The commission isn't as hard-headed, I think, as people have been led to believe. If the district believes a person is the person they want to have, we have the emergency administrator license, we have the exceptional administrator license, we have the transitional administrator license, so out-of-staters can come in and become licensed immediately with no further steps, and then they're given 3 years to get their one little test out of the way. Superintendents can come in with 5 years background, and all they need to do is take Oregon school law and school finance, and then they can get the top license. It's not the old days where people used to pick up transcripts. I don't think those stories are ever going to go away, and the commission says, oh my goodness, you're missing this class, you must now go and enroll in the university program and take hours and hours of classes. It's not like that. That's not reasonable. I think we've created every equitable possible way for people to have a license to be a superintendent or an assistant superintendent if the school district wants to vouch for them. But it does give them the credibility of having to demonstrate that they have been through the same agency that licenses their colleagues who take a program.
If I could just focus this. What I'm trying to get at is the difference between Representative Parrish's bill and current law is that, in essence, it would be clear in state law that local jurisdictions could hire non-professionals to be superintendent. It would send a message out to the market, maybe people who don't necessarily think they would qualify, that the state accepts this. And what happens is you do the hiring first and the credentialing backwards, on the back end. That's all that this bill is really trying to get at. And I think if we put in what you're talking about, it's like making the system go. But I think what the bill is attempting to do is very simple. It's just you guys want to have the system where you got to go through the system, then you can be hired. What Representative Parrish is doing is a very simple little change, which is you hire the people, and then it's sent out to the message loud and clear that we allow laymen to come in here who are good managers, and then we have a process for them to get, in essence, we can put in the language you discussed, and we've solved the problem here. We've got a good bill. I mean, it seems like this to me. This is there's something else going on here because this is a simple fix. There's either something going on here, or I'm missing something big, because it sounds like to me that a simple fix from the House could have come over here, slam bam, everybody agree, and we're off. So there's got to be another story here that somebody's not explaining to me.
Is that the question, then?
Well, I mean, it sounds like a political runaround here.
Yeah,
I think it'd be easy for us to fix this bill. So why can't it get fixed?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, it's not a political runaround. I think if you follow what Ms. Chamberlain is saying, we have exactly what you're describing. Exactly. I think there are areas in the licensure, and this is certainly what prompted our organization to be very interested in this whole area. I mean, obviously, we represent these folks. But that there are areas that could be worked on, improved, changed, resulting in less expensive alternatives to OUS. I mean, there are a whole group of people who have not been brought into that discussion, including OUS, that may have opinions on the quality of their program versus the quality of others. I mean, I think all that can be dealt with. Mainly, it's found, I think, probably in the relicensure issue rather than in the direct licensure issue. And certainly, we're not done talking about this. But what we became persuaded of is these avenues, as I think Ms. Chamberlain explained, absolutely exist. There is no question about it. And if the issue is publicity, then I would hope we'd all go to Ways and Means and provide her agency with more money to publicize the alternative avenues available, because that appears to be the shortfall. But that doesn't require a change in the law to accomplish it. This does exist in the law for this avenue to be available. And I certainly understand. Listen, if you're coming over here from the House with a different point of view than you announced to a committee, if it isn't suspect, they ought to at least be looking at my license. You know, that is not what you want to be doing as a lobbyist or as an organization. It's just that as time has passed, it's just become clearer and clearer that exactly what you describe is the situation right now. It does exist. There are opportunities. You don't have to get the training. You just have to have the background check to make sure you're not some sort of person that we do not want working with our kids. But I think you can't also eliminate the argument that I think Senator Hass made, or the allusion he made to the enormous amount of time that professional educators, time, expense, a learning put into their profession. I mean, I've been here trying to help or hinder, depending on your point of view, making law for a number of decades, a couple of decades at least now. I should be a lawyer. How come I don't have the same license as Senator Bonamici? Can't I just come in and get it? Well, I got to go to law school and I got to take the bar. Gosh, I'm ready to go under some scenarios which might be comparable to this bill. So at least look at it from and probably, you know, probably do okay. I can handle small, you know, simple divorces and wills. But
I will vote for your bill. How's that? I would vote for your bill.
So would I.
My point is made.
Thank you both.
Just a very quick question, Chuck.
Yes.
When there is a vacancy, what is the typical process for posting a notification publicly in a district that is hiring a superintendent? Because listening to this, it's pretty clear to me that we do have alternative routes, but we don't have very clear, maybe, understanding of the field of potential candidates that, in fact, they could apply and be eventually approved based on a different background. So I just very quickly, because I know we do it.
Chair Haas, Senator Morris, I can tell you this because I used to work at OSBA, and they are actually very helpful in this regard. Most districts actually alert OSBA or someone else who they're interested about the vacancy, and the searches are very intense, as Senator Bonamici alluded to, and the word gets out there. I actually get flyers regularly in the mail when there is a vacancy. It's announced. It goes out to school districts. It goes out to the school community, soliciting, you know, applications. After that, the process becomes internal. But there is a jobs site vacancy on the COSA webpage that is maintained by the Oregon School Personnel Association. And so that network statewide is extremely well known. It's a pretty sophisticated, open network. That's how I learned about this job.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if anyone out there does have a simple divorce, call Chuck Bennett.
I'm going to update my will.
And Justin Black.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association, and I'm going to leave the divorce part of this out of my testimony. I'm here today to testify in opposition to House Bill 3555. We did not testify on the House side, and I'll tell you that I did not testify because of the hundreds of education bills that were heard. It's hard to testify on all of them, and frankly, I did not believe this bill was going anywhere, so I didn't dial in on the House side. Since it's in the Senate, it's time to talk. We are really surprised that you're considering a bill that would require less education and training than our educational assistants are required to have in order to work in school, or our school bus drivers are required to have when they work in for a school district. School superintendents manage some of the largest public agencies in this state, with hundreds of millions of taxpayers' dollars in their hands to spend as the statutes require. We understand that people in business manage businesses, but to manage a business isn't the same as to manage a school district. School districts do very little, that isn't mandated by statute, either state statute or federal statute. And they are operating under public money and public meetings laws and all sorts of other requirements. It is a very substantial job. If we were going to advocate for changes in what superintendents are required to know and show in skills and abilities prior to becoming superintendents, we would ask you to include far greater requirements and understanding of public administration. We think it's great that they need to have an educational background, but by the time they're superintendents, they're running huge public agencies, and they need to know how to do that too. We would urge you to not move this bill forward. There are currently, under the laws, opportunities for people who do not have superintendent's licenses to go to work, as you've heard from the last two speakers. We think this is an unnecessary bill, and it will damage our schools.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair Hatz, members of the committee. My name is Justin Black from the Oregon Education Association. We represent about 45,000 educators throughout the state of Oregon. I'm here to testify in opposition to the bill, but I don't believe I have much to add after Ms. Smith and the group before us. I think the question is, about it's accountability up front, and it's a reoccurring accountability with licensure re-upping. And I think that is our major opposition to this, is just an ongoing system for accountability to make sure that we have the best possible people running our schools. And I will keep it that short.
Thank you both. Questions?
Sir George? I won't tirade this time. Quick question. So if we adopted something similar to what's in the charter school, which is just for superintendents, we're not talking about principals or assistant principals, we're just talking about superintendents, we adopt something similar to what we see in the charter schools bill, where basically you can hire your person and then they have to go through the standards practices, would that then take care of your concerns? Because it seems like to me that would be...
Mr. Chair, Senator George, that would not take care of our concerns. We think that the requirements for charter school superintendents or heads of charter schools are not adequate, and we would advocate for more stringent superintendent requirements than you have in the law now.
I agree.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you both. I think this was a really good debate on this issue, and I am going to make it part of our agenda in the interim to look at whether we can make the exceptional administrator license or other avenues perhaps more user-friendly or more streamlined, so that we can get that Intel engineer or a financial manager access to our schools if they want to contribute. And so I thank everyone, including Representative Parrish, for bringing this issue to us. And I think this issue's still alive, maybe not today, but it's on our agenda. I close the public hearing on House Bill 3359 and reopen a public hearing and work session on House Bill 3336. General Caldwell, if you could come up, and thank you for your patience.
I enjoy enjoyed the debate.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director at the Military Department. I'm here to testify in support of 3336. I would just add to, you probably don't need any more testimony from our end, but to maybe answer some of the questions or at least enlighten you. Presently, right now, if the Institute of Higher Education or even high school takes federal money, the federal government requires that the recruiting of all the services has access onto the campuses under their rules. So this is not a big jump. It's a clarification, I think, that showing the state policies in line with what the federal government is currently doing. I think, by and large, I will tell you that we have very little opposition to our folks being on campuses to discuss potential military careers with young people. And I think that only in a couple instances where you have a religious connotation that prevents that, that it's prevalent. And even there are accommodations made for those particular students who may have that desire. So we enjoy a very good relationship with all the institutions and the community colleges and even about 98% of the high schools. So I would tell you that this is a good policy statement, but it certainly has not been a major impediment for us over the last several years. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
I guess I'd be interested in knowing what, you know, how successful the recruiters are on college campuses.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, presently we've enjoyed now for about the last 5 or 6 years a boom in recruiting. I think it's always been my contention that recruiters, if the economy is bad, their numbers aren't very good, they tell you the economy is bad. If the economy is good and your numbers aren't good, then they tell you the economy is too good. So I think there's always a, as they used to tell us in younger years, that the only time a recruiter lies is when his lips move. But I think generally speaking, we've had people knocking the door down, basically trying to get into the service, into the National Guard and all the other services. So why that is, I think a lot of it has to do with the economy, frankly. I really believe that. The other part of that is it's a good way to get education money. And I think, thirdly, there's a great deal of patriotism out there during the last 8 years of the conflicts that we've been engaged in halfway across the world. So I think a combination of the three, it probably would speak to most of the increase that we've seen in young men and women wanting to get into our organization. And I suspect that a good deal of that, most of the kids that we talk to have a desire to go on to higher education, and this is a very very good way for them to do that with respect to get the money to do that.
Other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, General.
I do divorces too. So.
Oh, good. I don't think I've ever seen a simple one, but glad to know there's people ready to... I'm close the public hearing on House Bill 3336A and open up a work session on House 3336A.
We have no amendments.
Are you good to go?
I'm good to go.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3336A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3336 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We're down to Senator Shields.
We need someone.
I'd be happy to carry it, Mr. Chair.
Senator Shields? Okay. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3359 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3197. Representative Esquivel is here. If you could give us a summary, Linda.
Thank you. House Bill 3197 requires school districts to adopt attendance notification policies and specifies the required elements, provides options for parents to determine the method of notification, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2011.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome.
For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. This bill is a pretty simple bill. It should be in place anyway, I guess what I'm saying.
Are you saying there ought to be a law?
There ought to be a law. as we know, we've lost some children. This may not have helped those children, but then again, maybe someday it will come into play and will help. Most school districts have some sort of a notification on staff now. This would solidify it and make sure that every school district has some sort of a way to let you know your child is not in school, either by email, electronically, or a phone call. It, of course, I've heard people say, well, that may be a lot of work. Well, maybe a lot of work, but I don't think so. Because if your absenteeism is that high, then it must be a very, very large school, and you'd have capacity to take care of that accordingly. If it's a small school, everyone in the school would know that the individual was gone. I hope that we can do something with this. I hate to make it mandatory because, to me, it should be a common-sense approach, but evidently it isn't. So that's why we're here today. Any questions?
Senator Bonamici.
I just thank you, Representative Esquivel, for your testimony and for bringing this bill. Are all the school levels of school treated the same, elementary through high school?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, it should be.
Okay. Just wondered. Thank you.
You guys let me off pretty easy.
I know. That is not our intent.
What's going on?
We plan on killing you once you leave the room.
Oh, no, you're not going to carry it, are you?
Sal and I were talking about how me carrying his bill on the floor is doesn't improve the odds.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Anyone else signed up?
Does
Senator Morris?
Impact, Mr. Chair?
We have our
this bill?
Traveling papers, sir, with us. Minimal expenditure.
It is minimal.
Minimal.
Anybody going else going to opine about this bill?
I was hoping you would.
No,
we have no one else signed up.
I wanted to hear from the schools.
And we have no opposition in our file.
I wonder what they think.
So, I'm going to open up we are in a work session on House Bill 3197A.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 3197A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3197A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bonamici?
I'm going to support the bill. It's my understanding that most of the districts already have these policies, and for those that don't, it's probably a good thing. You know, we get worried about additional mandates without extra funding, but it's probably the case that most of the districts already have this, and the way I read the bill, it could be a notification could be by email. Mm-hmm. So I'll support the bill.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I happen to notice in my notes, my staff had entered that the Portland School District does not have this policy. That'd be the largest district in the state. Is that?
Oh, they do know. They
is that in fact
my understanding that changed
now.
After
right.
the Kyron right. disappearance.
We see an affirmative head nod in the back of the room from somebody with who knows.
If they didn't have and now do, is that?
They have one now. It's my understanding.
This is good. The signaling in the back row that we started doing here saves time and very much.
We'll look forward to that testimony in the future.
Maybe we can get a mirror.
We just have a camera on the back row.
Yeah.
So it's taking his testimony.
Further discussion? Seeing none, objections? Seeing none, House Bill 3197A goes to the State Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. We're all the way back up to Senator Bonamici, if you would like to carry this bill. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 3197. I think that clears our calendar.
Yes, sir.
We have until tomorrow. We're on a one-hour notice, but I don't anticipate that to happen. I do want to say, besides thanks to everyone involved, especially in the committee here, that of note, every single legislator in this building who had a bill that was referred to this committee and who asked for it to be heard and aired in this committee did have it heard and aired in this committee. So with that, any parting comments? If not, we are adjourned.